You're with Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, this is TNT Radio, and you are listening to the Misty Winston Show. Thanks for tuning in today. Okay, so before we introduce our guest for the hour, I'm going to rant again about Julian Assange, because that's what I do. Okay, so again, as I've mentioned multiple times, we are in, it's crunch time. So the decision in terms of the extradition request from the United States sits like solely on the shoulders of UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. The UK Supreme Court just denied the request for appeal, which sent it back to the district courts, which was just a procedural thing. They rubber stamped it and sent it on to Priti Patel. We do not have a timeline. There's no end game here. There's no deadline. There's no scheduled date where she will announce the decision. We just kind of are in a if you're in Assange activism, it's a constant state of limbo. That's just how it works. We never really know what's going on. They like to keep this thing dragging out for as long as possible. We need everybody to get involved. However, you can get involved, whether it's sending emails or tweets or writing letters to your local newspapers, letters to the editor, lobbying your local news organizations to cover the story. Whatever you can do, make phone calls, all of that good stuff. I have a list. If you follow me on Twitter at Sarcasm Stardust, I have a thread where it has different graphics for different phone numbers that you can call, including the White House, the Department of Justice, Priti Patel herself, as well as Amnesty International, because frankly, I'm out of patience. They have yet to give Assange the prisoner of conscience designation. I don't know if there's ever been a more clear-cut case for that. So the idea that they've yet to do that is embarrassing for them, and they should stop messing around and just do it. So you can also call Amnesty International and put some pressure on them to do that. We have seen recently an outpouring of support. I think a lot of people are starting to recognize how serious this is, really. It's unfortunate that it's taken this long, but almost every major press freedom organization, human rights organization, everybody's coming out, writing letters, open letters, all of that stuff to Priti Patel, encouraging her to do the right thing and deny the extradition request. But I will never lie to you. Priti Patel is corrupt. She's really, really corrupt. Don't come for me. That's just my opinion. As Kit Clarenberg just recently published in The Gray Zone, she has a lot of really nefarious ties to some very shady people. And she is definitely no friend to press freedom. The only thing that will stop this from happening is mass public pressure. If we make it politically untenable for them to continue this thing, then that's our only hope, really. The court system's not going to do the right thing. Priti Patel won't do the right thing. The United States government won't do the right thing unless they're forced. So, we need a mass public pressure campaign. We need people to be loud if you want to do a protest. If you contact me on Twitter, I'll help you. I'm not like the organizing expert of the world, but I've done it, so I can help you figure out what you need to do to make that happen. You can make phone calls and emails, all that good stuff. We need a lot more noise being made about this. There is a mainstream media blackout, essentially. The only time they ever cover it is to smear him or to lie to you about what's going on. And frankly, it's really difficult for me to even get independent media to cover it. It's kind of a third rail issue. If you have Assange in the title of a video that you do, it will probably be shadow banned. You'll be killed by the algorithm. And most people are more concerned about the number of clicks they get and subscriptions and all of that stuff than they are about covering, the greatest threat to press freedom of all time, which is unfortunate, but that's where we are. We need you. We need all of your voices. We do have this tiny window of time. Again, we don't really know how long it's going to take for her to come to a decision. And again, I will not lie to you. It's not looking good. She will almost certainly rubber stamp this thing and approve the extradition request. That's just the sad reality of it. That doesn't mean that we give up the fight. That just means we have to fight harder. And if he is extradited, that just means we have to up our game even harder. Because this really is, again, it's the United States seeking global jurisdiction over information and journalism. I'm just going to keep saying it. These are known liars and psychopaths. These are the people who have lied us into how many wars? I mean, I don't want these people to have the ability to arrest somebody from anywhere in the world. Julian Assange is not an American citizen. So the idea that this will give them the power and authority to arrest anybody anywhere around the globe, if you dare to publish something that embarrasses empire, is really dangerous. That's a really scary thing. And that's where we're headed. So, and again, it's not about Assange. He really is just kind of the figurehead of this fight. He is to them, I feel like he's being used as the proverbial head on a stake. It's really about them grabbing and maintaining complete control over the narrative and being able to silence anybody that dares to, speak outside the lines. So it really is crunch time. We really need to make as much noise as possible. If she does decide to extradite, there are a couple of different things that could happen. They could appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. They could go back and appeal based on the press freedom aspects of the case, because thus far it's only been about the mental health aspects of the case. But I'm not part of the legal team. I'm not privy to those kinds of decisions or what their game plan is, and they have not announced it, which is understandable. So we just have to do our best to make as much noise as possible. However you can do that, please do it, because it really is, we're up against it. Not gonna lie, it's a bad time. Okay, I'm done ranting. This is TNT Radio.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay. Joining us this hour is incredible Syrian-based independent journalist Vanessa Beely. Vanessa's work on the Syrian war has been crucial in understanding the reality of what's happening on the ground there. She's also done extensive work exposing the fraud that is the White Helmets, and she's been doing a fantastic job covering the situation in Ukraine, and really doing so from a realistic perspective rather than the nonsense that we are fed here in the United States. She contributes regularly to many outlets. She also produces her own content, which you can find on various platforms, and you can also find and follow her on Twitter at Vanessa Beely, as well as on Telegram, which is t.me/Vanessa Beely. Hey Vanessa, thanks so much for being here. Are you doing all right?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. Nice to be speaking to you.
Are you avoiding again. Are you avoiding the monkeypox?
Here in Syria, I honestly wouldn't even want to bring it up.
It's unbelievable, kind of. Not really. I keep saying things are unbelievable, but at this point, nothing surprises me. It's just, the world is a chaos right now. Everything, Vanessa. We're getting bombarded with nonsense from every possible angle, and I'm exhausted.
Yeah, the whole monkeypox thing was inevitable. I mean, they started floating it out, I think, about a month ago, right? And then now suddenly, I'm sure it's only a coincidence that they're trying to push through the WHO.
The treaty.
Global Health Tyranny Treaty. Bring in another weird virus.
I know. It's so scary. Yeah. This WHO treaty. Let's talk about the WHO treaty, because I know you've been following that. And it is, I don't think it's being talked about nearly enough, not even in independent media. I've been trying to pay attention to other people's stuff to see if anybody's discussing it. And nobody really is. I mean, I've had multiple people on this show. I've been trying to cover it as much as I can. But this is a massive power grab, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, bottom line. I mean, we saw during the whole kind of COVID-19 project for the last, from 2020 until 2022, that effectively governments don't have overall power. I mean, we saw a lot of confusion, particularly in the UK, even in the US, right? And I think then it became apparent to those that were really watching what was going on that governments were being displaced. In other words, the ruling class, the real ruling class, the predator class, the parasite class, the oligarch class, whatever you want to call it, is in charge now, right?
Yep.
And so this WHO treaty, effectively, that's what it's doing. It's legitimizing that power grab that had already been going on for some time, right? What it's effectively saying is that in the case of any emergency, health emergency, like a pandemic, then the WHO has the right to supersede government authority. So that means that the members of parliament, the members of Congress, the members of your government that you have supposedly elected, you know, because of course we're all living in these democratic utopias, right? In the civilized world, in the global north, we're all we're all democratic dudes, right? So
yes,
totally. Those representatives of us no longer have any say in our lives. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yes.
So what little kind of semblance, what little fig leaf of democracy that we had left is just about to get blown off completely. And the emperor is there with absolutely nothing on, right? This is total totalitarianism, whatever ism you want to call it. This is what it is. And
yes.
The thing is that, you know, you're right. People are not really paying attention to it. This is the scary thing. You know, people didn't pay attention during COVID.
No.
The thing is that the whole COVID project has resulted in, it's very difficult to quantify because, of course, the organizations that should be investigating, for example, the vaccine adverse reactions and deaths, the deaths from using tranquilizers, etc., in old people's homes, the abandonment and isolation of the elderly, the deaths from suicides, the deaths from depression, the deaths from drug abuse, etc., the homelessness, the poverty, all of this, child abuse, is not being investigated because, of course, these are the results that they wanted to achieve through the COVID project, right? And even during that, people were not really paying attention. And then, of course, you know, they got sideswept into the war in Ukraine. So everyone kind of forgot about COVID. I would argue that COVID did the same thing to people leading up to the war in Ukraine, which was a massive provocation of Russia leading to the war, right? And then which led to the fallout from that, which of course is further starvation, further deprivation for the EU and America and in the UK.
Yep.
Because of the heavy economic punishment that was meted out against Russia by the West. And I mean, Biden has made it quite clear that, you know, he's literally rubbing his hands in glee and saying, Europe's going to suffer.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, it's blatant. It's kind of right out there, you know, and they're wheeling out the psychopaths, the senile psychopaths, you know, like Tony Blair and Bush are back on stage.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's kind of, it's really become a freak show right now.
Yes. And I was just talking to Tara Reid that you're right. They're not hiding it anymore. They're not.
No.
It's very blatant.
No, I mean, they kind of stopped hiding it during COVID.
Yeah.
But now in Ukraine, I mean, there's, you know, hi guys, like we are openly, not you and me,
right.
But I mean, our government are openly supporting Nazis, you know, the same Nazis that we were supposed to have defeated at the end of World War II and that we swore we're never going to be allowed back and et cetera, et cetera. But we've been nurturing them. You know, CIA has been nurturing them since the end of World War II. They're embedded in most of our financial, industrial, governmental institutions. Look at Chrystia Freelander in Canada. Look at BMW. Look at Porsche. Look at all manner of the top elite industrial and capitalist entities. You will find Nazi elements in there, in the scientific area, in the health area. I mean, Operation Paperclip imported Nazi doctors, Nazi engineers, Nazi scientists, right? Okay, they might be second, third generation, but they're still there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, her grandfather worked for Goebbels. Yes. She herself has worked for two Banderite, so supporting Stepan Bandera, who carried out some of the worst programs against the Jews. And she was working for two media outlets that supported the Banderites in Ukraine. And of course, you know, she's instrumental in what's going on in Ukraine, as is Victoria Nuland, married to Robert Kagan. You know, all members of the Straussian cult, which Thierry Meyssan has written about. so this whole power grab is connected. You know, what is going on in Ukraine is connected to what went on in COVID, and it's connected to what's coming. Right. 100%. And the thing is that people are not making those links. And I'm not talking about for me, which is a little bit of it's a bit of an easy reductionist conclusion to say that, well, they're all in it together.
Right.
You know, and Russia and America and the entire West and East have come together to concoct this war in Ukraine because they know that it's going to lead to mass depopulation and starvation and more dependency on the state. And they can, you know, take away even more powers of the working class, of what I call the little people, because that's how they see us, right?
Right.
You know, we're the dispensables. We are the Untermenschen, in fact. They just haven't quite come out with that yet.
Right. Yeah, they haven't been quite that bold yet. Not yet.
I mean, Yuval Hariri has kind of, you know, we are the useless eaters.
Right.
So he has kind of gone down that bunny hole already.
Yes.
But, you know, let's say The Guardian and CNN and all that lot aren't quite coming out with it yet.
Yeah, not yet. But yes, you're right. And I think that what's so disturbing about the whole the supporting of Nazis in Ukraine is that they're trying to, in real time, rewrite history and pretend like these are not, they're not Nazis. They don't exist. That's not. And it's very frustrating to me to witness so many people fall for that. There are mainstream media articles from just like 4 years ago where they talk about the existence of the Azov Battalion in the Ukrainian military. They're Nazis. And now 4 years later, the same outlets are like, no, they're not Nazis. Are you joking? Like, that's Russian propaganda. That's Russian disinformation. What are you talking about? And it's weird. Like, it's weird. I feel like we're in the worst timeline ever. Oh.
I mean, they've actually flipped it on its head. Now the Azov Brigade, which previously, as you rightly said, were openly Nazi, are now just nationalists fighting the real Nazis, which are the Russians. I mean, you know, right. It's a little bit mind-blowing. And then, of course, we have the same blueprint that we had in Syria, you know, all the false flags, all the false allegations, all the unproven allegations, the setting up immediately of the ICC to prosecute Russia while having kind of swept under the carpet the last 8 years genocide in Donbass by the, you know, the kind of, in inverted commas, non-Nazi battalions, who've also been carrying out effectively ethnic cleansing in these areas. I mean, I don't know if your listeners know of Diliana Gaitanjeva, the Bulgarian journalist who investigated the U.S. biolabs starting in Tbilisi in Georgia in 2018. So, you know, way before it all kicked off in Ukraine. And she told me in an interview that Bulgarian nationals in Ukraine have reported back to their families in Bulgaria that for a long time, Bulgarians in Ukraine who refused to go and fight against Donetsk and Lugansk were being disappeared, were being murdered, were being tortured, were being burned alive and executed by the Azov brigades and the various other. Of course, Azov are not alone, but rather like Al-Qaeda in Syria, they're probably the dominant force. Yeah. And, you know, there are a force that has been, just like Syria, where the West has effectively trained and equipped and armed the extremist groups, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And of course, in Syria, they're described as moderate rebels, right? They're not terrorists. Mm-hmm. They're right. Not the same guys that allegedly carried out 9/11, but let's not get into that.
That's a whole other show.
that's another whole kind of bunny hole to go down. Yeah. But let's say that 9/11 kicked off the whole, global war on terror, and since then, terror has exponentially grown beyond our wildest nightmares. Why? Because the West is effectively weaponizing it, allowing it to expand when it suits them. So, when they need to take down another country, we'll just let them escape from the holding camps that we've had them in for some time. Yes. Right? And, that same thing is going on inside Syria, in Iraq, and it's been going on in the Middle East in Ecuador, et cetera, et cetera. And now
this is what we do. We're
pretty much seeing the same thing.
Yeah, the CIA. This is what we do. This is what we do. The playbook works, so they don't. Why change it? The playbook works, so they just continue with the same tactics. And it's really depressing that people can't see through it at this point. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Everybody, hang tight for a couple minutes. Okay. We're going to be back with more from Vanessa Beely right after this here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Jesse Zerowell is talking about.
I wholeheartedly stand behind that, and I've been really galled by the increasing rhetoric about how this is what's happening in Ukraine is part of the Great Reset agenda. And some people even going so far as to say that all of this is staged or phony or orchestrated. What I just read is your response to that, but maybe we can talk about that a little bit, because I think it needs to be addressed and put in its place.
It's being amplified by the media discourse, of course, Western media discourse, which are eliciting sympathy for Ukrainians because they're white, they're blue-eyed, they're blonde-haired, they look like us, they dress like us. I mean, this kind of language is actually being used, which is, it's racism.
Jesse Zerowell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Nearly every day, we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
People join Walk MS to raise awareness and funds that change the world for everyone affected by multiple sclerosis. Walk MS brings communities together, creating teams with friends, loved ones, and coworkers to rally around those we care about and end MS forever. Together, we can change the world for people with MS. Register today at walkms.org.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, this is TNT Radio. You're listening to the Misty Winston Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm joined this hour by independent investigative journalist Vanessa Beely. And we're talking a little bit about everything. There's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot to try to sift through and find the truth, because there's a lot of propaganda being tossed at everybody. And it's difficult to figure out what is really going on. And we talked a little bit before the break about, you mentioned that the ICC has already been set up to investigate Putin of his war crimes. And I do feel a little bit like that narrative is starting to crumble, because and really thank you, George W. Bush, for his little Freudian slip, because he almost single-handedly helped destroy that whole narrative. Because as I've said many times on this show, everything that Putin has done, and listen, I'm not a Putin apologist. Like, I don't like any world leaders. I think they're all, you have to be, if you reach that level of power, you have to be kind of a psychopath. But you know, everybody's pretending as if he's this like insane war criminal who's out there just slaughtering civilians. You know, he just woke up one day and decided to destroy Ukraine. But everything cumulatively that he has done in Ukraine so far is like a Tuesday for the United States. And so it's, you know, George W. Bush with his little gaffe, I think, really helped to expose the hypocrisy of that narrative. It's funny.
Yeah. I mean, that was quite special. There was also, I think it was in the last couple of days, there was also an interview with Tony Blair, which is, you know, why I'm saying, like, they're just wheeling out the psychopaths right now, the real psychopaths. Yes. You know, and he was talking about the Putin he met in 2000 and the Putin now. And of course, he was bolstering this whole narrative that Putin has just become this kind of power-hungry maniac, totally wicked, sort of morally hollowed out. People around him aren't telling the truth. I mean, literally, you know, you just watch these infanticidal maniacs who led how many wars? I mean, decimated former Yugoslavia, bombed the shit out of Serbia, dropped depleted uranium, enabled the murder of 500,000 kids in Iraq through economic sanctions, bombed Baghdad to oblivion, murdered surrendered soldiers in Fallujah, dropped depleted uranium, flattened Mosul, flattened Raqqa. I mean, you know, the list just goes on and on and on, right? Yes. And not to mention Yemen, what they're doing in Yemen.
Yeah.
You know, just completely blockading, besieging, or genociding an entire nation and supplying the weapons and the fuel and the technology to do so, and using cluster bombs on children and on kids. Oh, and let's not forget the bombing of east of Deir ez-Zor in Syria in March 2019, Bakhuz, where they dropped a 500-pound bomb on women and children. And now the Pentagon has said they're not responsible. It was a defensive attack. You know, and then you have Israel shooting journalists in the head, Shireen Abu Akleh, and basically trying to claim the same thing. Well, yeah, it was the other side. I mean, this is enough.
I know. Mean,
that's basically what's happened. You know, people, you have to understand Russia and Putin, and it's not just Putin. The thing is, they do this really good job, right? They did it in Syria. They did it in Libya. They did it in Iraq. It all becomes about one person. So it all becomes about Gaddafi. It all becomes about Saddam Hussein, and it all becomes about President Assad. And now it's all about Putin. But what they forget is the size of Russia and the fact that Putin has popular backing for this war. And actually, that has also grown exponentially as people understand what's going on and as the information comes out about the mass reprisals against Russian speakers, against the civilians in Donetsk and Lugansk, but not only in Donetsk and Lugansk. You know, the fact that the biolabs have been exposed, the fact that it's now known that there were further detention centers in Ukrainian-held territory, right? Not just in the eastern sector, which was resisting the US-imposed fascism from 2014 onwards, right? And what people forget, it's not just about Putin. You know, Putin can't go to war as one man.
Right.
He has an entire parliamentary structure, institutional structure around him, just as President Assad does. You know, the majority of people in Syria work within government sector.
Yep.
And it's exactly the same thing inside Russia. So, you know, we need to kind of stop being led up the garden path of it's all about one man. The funny yes. thing is, on reflection, it is usually about one sector in the US or the UK. We don't have any choice. I mean, choice is an illusion for us. Like, yes. just as democracy is an illusion, it's a mirage. You know, we don't have a choice.
No.
Really, we don't.
No.
If our leaders decide to spend, well, if Biden decides to spend $40
yes.
in Ukraine, does anyone have any choice?
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely
and politicians
not.
On the left will vote for that. They all voted yeah. for that.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. You know, so don't, you know, don't delude yourself that your country is any different to how they describe all these countries. You're living in a dictatorship. You're yep. living in a country where state-sanctioned violence will be used against you when you dissent.
Yes.
Right. Just as we've seen in France, we saw it in Canada. You know, and I'll come back to Trudeau and the Nazi roots of his second in command, who one can argue is actually the one in command, right?
Yeah.
And then look at the WEF, look at Schwab. I mean, Whitney Webb and Johnny Vedmore did a brilliant deep dive into his Nazi background, mm-hmm. you know? So the links are there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of really important right now for people to start seeing this, that the CIA has set this up for decades. This hasn't just happened. This didn't just start on February the 24th.
No.
Right. And for people to think that Russian intelligence was not aware of what was coming, but were trying to avert it, that this is what people really don't understand. And they don't understand Russian culture, Russian mindset, Russian ideology. They just don't get it, you know. And the thing is, I'm not an expert, but I try to speak to experts, either from Russia or people that have spent a lot of time there, former diplomats, former ambassadors, even former British intelligence officers, etc., that know the country inside out. And they will all tell you Russia would not go to war unless it had absolutely no choice. Okay.
Right.
And I can attest to that in Syria because although I haven't spent a lot of time in Russia, in Syria I've been on a number of front lines, as has Eva Bartlett, of course, alongside yeah. Syrian Arab Army and Russian military. And the Syrian army has often been frustrated by the Russian army holding back to try and achieve political resolution before military resolution. Okay, so the Syrian army on occasions has considered that it's lost an advantage militarily because Russia has been talking politically at a political level and trying to find political resolution. Of course, in the end, it pretty much failed across the
right.
board, but that's what they were trying to do. People complain that you know, well, the Russian military intervention is so slow, they're taking their time. Well, they're taking their time because the Azov battalions, and again, this is Western playbook, mm-hmm. just as Israel will do, just as the US has done through their terrorist proxies inside Syria, the Azov battalions are using civilians as human shields. So,
yes.
of course, Russia has been very circumspect in its military operation because it's trying to preserve civilian infrastructure and civilian life. But
yes.
this is a war, you know, but let's compare the Russian operation to, for example, Baghdad in 2003, or Raqqa, or Mosul, or Yemen.
Yeah,
you know, there's no comparison. And this is the problem, is people are projecting their Western-centric
yes.
understanding onto a totally different culture. So it's East versus West.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's tons of projection.
You know,
Tons. Yeah. You're absolutely right about that. Yes.
Yeah.
No question.
And, you know, and it's not, I'm not blaming people for it, because the thing is they're being fed, you know, this information 24/7. They're being gaslighted, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, and it is difficult. It is quite difficult to put yourself in a totally other culture, other ideology, other, you know, even in the Middle East, people would have a real problem totally understanding the mentality of people here, the culture here, and what led them to resist 11 years of a regime change war here, despite the absolutely harrowing effects of war, and most recently and probably most destructively, the economic sanctions. And in Russia, you know this for Russia, this and for the Russian people and the Russian sympathetic people in Ukraine, or the Russian speakers in Ukraine, or even people that just are against fascism, this is an existential war. You know, Russia to a degree, and Putin has made this clear in a number of speeches, particularly to the Valdai Club, I think about 5 years ago, he spoke about the debauchery in the West, the pedophilia, the Satanism. He spoke about it as a sense that Russia is defending its traditional conservative values. And whether we agree with those values or not, they have a right to hang on to them. You know, just because we've been kind of washed away in a tsunami of just accepting things that are really divisive and really not healthy for our society, it doesn't mean that other countries and other cultures are going to accept the same thing, right?
Right. Yes. And I think a lot of Americans are just really arrogant about that. And not, again, you're right, not really their fault. That's the culture that they've been raised in. But everybody, you're right, projects Western values onto every other country. And I think that that's a huge part of the misunderstandings that we have when we're, dealing with countries like Russia or like Syria. People don't understand the culture. They don't understand that it's a different value system there. And everybody thinks that, they should just think like we do. And that's not how the world works.
No, exactly. And that, you know, this is the whole point. We're forever trying to imprint our version of democracy, which, as I've said, is just, you know, it's a mirage anyway. onto cultures that either from a point of view of political evolution are not ready for it, or who culturally are not really going to fit into that one size fits all.
Right.
You know, and that's the point. It's one size doesn't fit all. You know, the culture here would never really cope with a kind of American version, English version, democracy. There is a democracy here, but it doesn't kind of fit the image of democracy that is being projected by the West, nor should it.
Right.
Why should it?
Exactly. Yeah. That's what's so frustrating about the whole American exceptionalism, is that we think that our way is the best and that everybody needs to adopt it. And our way doesn't even work for us. You know what I mean? We're going to impose that on somebody else. Ugh. Exhausting.
You know, exhausting. This is my point. I mean, yeah, it is, you know, and I just think, look, you know, all these people who think that they're supporting the Ukrainian people, and, you know, all war is bad and the invasion is terrible and it's violating international law, which, by the way, it isn't,
right?
Because Russia's borders were under direct threat. Russia itself, its national security was genuinely under threat, unlike ours in the West, which has probably never been under threat since World War II. And yet we've waged I don't know how many wars on the basis of our national security is under threat from some kind of imaginary enemy that they've created themselves. You know, I mean, it's just insane.
Exactly. Yes.
And again, you know, I think that's why people kind of almost went, well, what do you mean under threat? Because, You know, it's sort of like the boy that cries wolf too many times. You know, it's like, what?
That's what I mean. I think a lot of people are starting to snap out of that. Like, where they're, at least I've noticed it, that a lot of people who, you know, may have fallen for this stuff before are now starting to like really question, like, wait a minute, this doesn't make a lot of sense. And where I'm starting to see a lot more people, I think it's because they've just lied to us so many times that they have worn out any amount of integrity that they may have had or any kind of credibility that they used to have. And people are just starting to be a lot more skeptical than they used to be. I think Iraq was a huge part of that. I think Syria has been a huge part of that and kind of snapping people out of that Western American exceptionalism. If we're doing it, then it's for good and just reasons. And obviously we want to like help humanity. And I think people are starting to let that go. The mask has been removed, I think, for a lot of people. But we do have to take another break. Everybody hang on for just a couple minutes. We're going to be back with Vanessa Beely right after this here on TNT Radio.
Bill Gates loves tyranny. Ever wonder what country is the model for the world to follow, according to Bill Gates? Australia, which led the most oppressive lockdowns next to China.
Is it possible to prevent the next pandemic?
Yes, if every country does what Australia did, then you wouldn't be calling it a pandemic.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yes, that's right. Bill Gates' idea of the way to prevent the next pandemic is to follow the model of COVID lockdowns, quarantine camps, militarization, people being forced off beaches, endless contact tracing, forced masking, forced vaccinating. One of the most oppressive lockdowns on the planet, next to China, occurred in Australia. That's what Bill Gates wants for your future. Now you know what Bill Gates and the World Health Organization have in mind for you. Be afraid, be very afraid, and then get angry and fight back. For the Morano Minute, I'm Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
You only put your son to bed 1 hour ago and he's woken up saying his tummy really hurts and he's got a temperature. You're worried. The 111 person you normally speak to isn't available. The surgery's closed. It's not an emergency, but you're not sure what to do. Then you remember the new free 24-hour NHS number, 111. They assess you and direct you straight away to the medical help you need. Your 111 relieved mum.
If it's not a 999 emergency, but you need medical help fast, there's now 111 number to call. When it's less urgent than 999, call 111. Now available on the Isle of Wight.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Today, Julian Assange is a political prisoner while the mainstream media stays silent. Why did Julian Assange land in a London jail? Julian's statement in October 2011 may provide a clue.
Why is it that banks have so much to hide? Why is it that banks, even more than military and intelligence organizations, have attacked WikiLeaks? Because banks are all about secrecy. Banks are all about asset hiding, hiding the ill-gotten gains of rich individuals from around the world, stashing them in the Cayman Islands, other offshore jurisdictions, and yes, in London, number one censor of the British press.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
This is, in fact, TNT Radio, and you're listening to The Misty Winston Show, and I am joined this hour by independent journalist Vanessa Beely, and we have been, just really going through it. The state of the world right now, like, I'm really almost at a loss because, as we've been discussing, the situation in Ukraine, the idea that we're pretending as if there was just somebody on Twitter who said that the situation in Ukraine just started when the conflict started. And this is a real person. Like, I think it's hard to tell on Twitter, but I think this was a genuine person who is just really, and that's so, I'm really speechless because it's a failure of our media. It's just a fail. Like, we have no idea what's actually happening in the world. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think people need to really wake up to the fact that the media is lying to you, right? Pretty much 99.9% of the time. So you've actually got to take, you've got to get out of this gaslighting paradigm. It's a victim abuser relationship. Get out of it. You know, go and inform yourself. Find analysts, journalists, researchers that you trust, right? You know, nobody has a hold on truth.
No.
Because truth is forever evolving anyway, and it's nuanced and it's complex. But at least find someone that's looking for it.
Yes.
Right? You know, yes. That's the main thing. It's a journey. So find someone to take the journey with. But stop relying on, you know, the entire media complex to effectively abuse you, to remove your ability to judge a situation for yourself, and to put this kind of fear of peer pressure into you. Okay, like break out of this paradigm, because really and truly, now more than at any other time, the world is depending on you to do that.
Yes, you know,
because. If we stay in this sort of echo chamber prison, then we'll be here forever. I mean, I said it to someone, to Matt Errett, I was talking to last night. I said, you know, for me, I'm, you know, I don't have any, as you said, I don't have a savior government, right? I don't think someone is here to save the world.
Yeah.
But if I look at it in the cold light of day and I see that the East, meaning Russia and China and India and Pakistan and all the Middle East and all the Latin American countries and Central African Republic, etc., all of whom are kind of either overtly or quietly wishing that Russia is successful in this operation, right? If Russia doesn't succeed in this operation, we're screwed, because China's next, Iran is next, right?
Yep.
And then we've got nothing. We've got no buffer against what for me is a Western-centric oligarchical class that is determined to destroy us all. And that's the bottom line. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's really stark. But yes, that's exactly, because you're right. I think that we've already started to see them begin the process of manufacturing consent for a conflict with China. I think honestly, Russiagate, when Russiagate first started, I think China's always really been the big target. And I think that Russia just served as a really convenient placeholder, because we already have like that Cold War mentality where it's been programmed into everybody's brain to fear Russia. And obviously we need, like, the oligarchic powers need to take Russia out too. So, I mean, it served its purpose, but yes, I think that you're right. It's definitely, it doesn't stop with Russia, and
you've got Israel flexing its muscles right now, you know, and running exercises against Iran. I mean, the thing is, me personally, I don't think the war will be against Iran, certainly not at this stage, but it will be against Iran and Syria. So, you know, we've seen an uptick in bombings here, in aggression here from Israel, the killing of 5 senior military personnel only a few days ago in Masyaf to the northwest of Damascus. Of course, not reported in mainstream media at all. You know, Israel is systematically violating international law in Syria, claiming to be targeting Iranian military installations, but it has no right to do that anyway. Syria is at war. It has the right to choose its allies, and Iran has been a long-term ally. You know, President Assad recently went to Tehran. The chatter here is that this is because they know that at some point this entire conflict, which has been simmering for the last 11 years, and of course before then, is going to escalate, right? So a lot of people here believe he went there. It was all closed session. There were no press conferences. So the feeling here is that this was to discuss a strategy if there is an escalation in the war with Israel. Hezbollah's recent success in the Lebanese elections is also going to be another, you know, let's say, thorn in the side of the Zionist entity. So the feeling here is, so in a sense, you've got the war against the East, which is being led by NATO member states, of course, dominated by the US and the UK. So that's Russia and China. And then you've got India kind of floating around there, wondering whether it should come in with Russia and China. It certainly seems to be be heading in that direction, right? Pakistan, the same thing. And that's why you've had the overthrow of Imran Khan. And by the way, the US has just invaded Somalia, but no one's paying attention to that. You know, it's like, and then you've got Transnistria, you've got Taiwan, you've got, I mean, there's so much going on, right?
Yeah.
And so Israel, in a sense, is picking this moment to start its own, or at least to start the rhetoric about war. The US, in my view, isn't going to go down that road. Why? Because it knows that it potentially needs Iran for oil, just as it kind of U-turned on Venezuela and went back cap in hand when Russia cut off supply. So, you know, there's a lot of maneuvering going on at the moment, but we're at, if I look at it positively, which I do try to,
it's
hard. See it as a massive transformational time, you know, but it's going to be pretty bumpy and it's going to be very painful for quite a long time. But, you know, if we end up in a multipolar world without an entity that is enforcing its philosophy and ideology and brutality on us, then hallelujah. That's enough for me, you know?
No, that's a worthwhile fight. I mean, you're right. I think it is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But that is a worthwhile fight. I mean, I'm a big fan of the empire falling, and I'll get some heat for that. But there's no reason why the United States should exist with this level of power and be able to impose its will upon the entire globe. That shouldn't exist.
No, it's
ridiculous.
And that has always been its agenda. You know, let's don't fool yourself. You know, American exceptionalism is basically American tyranny. It's rules-based order, which, you know, the rules apply only to the rest of the world, not to the US. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, this has to change. The empire has to fall, as all empires fall. Okay. And this doesn't mean that you know, we're envisaging the destruction of America and Americans. No, not at all. But the system as it is, the global order as it is, has to be disintegrated. Absolutely. No question.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think that, as you just said, the rules-based order that we apply on everyone else, but it doesn't apply to us. I mean, I don't think anything could make it more clear than the example of us. Now we have legislation where we want to be able to, hold other countries accountable for their war crimes, but we won't even join the ICC. Yeah. And in fact, we have legislation on the books where if somebody does try to hold us accountable for our war crimes, that we will invade the Netherlands. I mean, that's where we're at.
Exactly.
You know, the rules do not apply to us.
And I mean, it's like the war crime, the clear war crime, the bombing of civilians in Syria is investigated who by the perpetrators, exactly. who then decide that they're not responsible. It's like, what?
I know. It's a completely bass-ackward system, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. We don't need the world's bully. I mean, the United States is the world's largest terrorist organization. I know that'll hurt some people's feelings who are real patriotic, but you can love your country without loving the system. And the system is broken, and it is causing chaos and death and destruction the world over. And I for one, would be happy to see it go down and for there to be a more peaceful existence amongst humanity. I think that should be the goal for everybody. And it's not going to happen under this system. It's just not going to happen.
No.
That's just the way that it is. Okay, so we only have a couple minutes left. Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you, where they can support your work?
Yeah, thanks, Misty. They can find me now on Substack. I went on there about 3 or 4 weeks ago. My Patreon, YouTube, I have a Telegram channel, just Vanessa Beely. My blog is The Wall Will Fall, and I have various other channels, but you can go to my Linktree and find them all on there. But the main one probably will be Substack now.
Yeah, that's exciting that you're on Substack. It seems to be holding true to its, I mean, it's difficult. Somebody said that it's like playing platform whack-a-mole, trying to find like platforms that won't censor you.
Yeah, I know.
So it's so hard. We're living in a time of unprecedented censorship. So, and as Vanessa said, find you somebody that you trust. As she said, nobody's going to have a lockdown on the truth, but find somebody that you think is authentic and is looking for the truth and support the shit out of them. We need to support independent media. And now now more than ever. They really are trying to, you know, gain a monopoly on the narrative. And that's really, really dangerous. So Vanessa, thank you so much. I know it's very late there, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. It's always fantastic to talk to you. And I will be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern with another show for you. But don't go anywhere. There's more coming at you right after this here on TNT.